Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 57 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Today I'm talking to an artist that I've admired for a very long time. Jamie Rovenstein paints detailed, colorful worlds. Abstract worlds that I'm going to assume are made of candy and where unicorns would live if they could. There are layers and layers of dots and lines and colors, but I am wondering when she has time to do this because she also has a 1.5-year-old daughter. And I think, from a few things I read online, that she actually has a full-time job too. So, let's go find out. Calling Kansas. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
I am so happy to finally talk to you.
You too. I feel extremely honored that you asked me to be on your podcast.
Well, that's very funny because I was just telling my husband when we were setting up the Pillow Fort headquarter pod that I record in, I said, I was so intimidated by you for so long.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And I don't know. I was just so, I think because, you know, Jamie Derringer, right?
Like through social media.
Okay.
Basically.
So
email.
She had referenced you or written about you or something, and I was like, whoa. And I loved your work, and I was like, oh, she's a big deal. And so I've always been intimidated by you. And then somehow we became friends on Facebook, and then I was like, oh, she's just nice and normal, which is what I found out about every single artist
yeah.
who I think is like built up in my mind. And so I was like, it's just so funny. And I was saying to my husband, we've been Facebook friends for a while, but... So I said, so I get to see your cute baby and all this
yeah.
stuff, but we've never actually talked about anything. And I just saw your amazing interview with Design Mom.
Yeah.
But I didn't read it because I didn't.
Okay, so it's all fresh info.
Yeah, because I was like, oh no, then I'm going to know all the stuff and then I'm going to second guess my questions. So I was like, I'm not going to read it.
Okay.
So I'm going to probably ask you all the same stuff. But that's so cool too.
Yeah, that was... Again, very honored to be on her blog and that she was at all interested in what I do. So,
your work is just so magical and rich and lovely. And so, yeah, I've got lots of questions about that. So, okay, this is what I always do. Let's just go backwards because I didn't read anything, I know nothing.
Okay.
I know that you're a mom and you paint amazing things. That's it. So, did you go to art school? Were you the kid that always made stuff? What were you like growing up?
Sure. So I grew up in Lawrence, Kansas, which is a college town in the middle of the United States. I guess I'm starting from the very, very beginning. We had really great art teachers in my elementary school, junior high and high school. So that I feel like was really fundamental to, just my love of art. And, but my mom always had really great, I was just talking to my husband a couple weeks ago. I was talking to him about, how we had all of these prints in my house growing up. And it wasn't until I went to art school in college that I realized that my mom had like prints by Picasso and Lautrec and all of these, you know, famous painters. And, I mean, she might've told me at some point, but so it's kind of like we had all of these, you know, these great historical paintings on our walls, but I had no idea.
Wallpaper to you.
Yeah.
And,
anyway, so I really appreciate about her too. And we had a really great art, it was called the Lawrence Art Center in Lawrence, Kansas. And so they, you know, it was like theater and art classes and things like that. And so I was in... like pretty regularly enrolled in those extra classes where, you know, my mom would let me, we'd get the catalog in the mail and I'd get like, oh, I'm going to take the pottery class this semester. And so, I was always a pretty artsy kid. And yeah, I had really, really great teachers. And so
that's amazing. That makes such a huge difference.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did you end up, you went to university for it?
I did, not originally. So I was into art all through, you know, junior high and high school. And then, I remember I had a high school art teacher who kind of, encouraged me to go to look into art school, but it wasn't, I don't know. It just, for some reason, like I didn't, have the understanding that like, oh, I could do that for a living. It was more like, well, I'm interested in art, but I didn't think of myself as an artist. It was more just like, I felt like it was a hobby. You know, it was a talent, but also like a hobby, just a thing I did. And so I ended up going to a really small, private school, like really small. And I went to, I changed my major like 3 times. So I think like I went for, I really wanted to do something that was helping people. And I, I think my first major was psychology, and then I switched to literature to be an English teacher. And then I switched to religion, and, it was kind of, you know, I didn't know what I want. I had the problem of being interested in lots of things. And so it was really hard for me to choose.
And well, that age is so hard to know. Yeah.
And I felt like there was kind of this pressure. I mean, I'm sure lots of high school students feel that. It's like, no, if you like, you have to choose what you're going to be for the rest of your life right now. And so I felt like I had to make a career choice at that time. Anyway, so it was after I was at that school for a year. I finished my freshman year of college, and then I was dating my husband at the time, and we actually got engaged my freshman year of college and got married after that year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I was just 19, and he was really encouraging actually. And so he encouraged me because I wasn't really enjoying where I was and felt like I made a bad choice that I probably should have gone to art school. And so he was really encouraging about it. And we got married, and then I decided I would drop out of school and work while he finished. And so he squeezed in like 3 semesters worth of school into 2 semesters. Like he just worked, he had so many classes just so we could move. It was in Oklahoma, and we were ready to leave. Anyway, so all that, like he graduated, and like the day after he graduated college, we packed up our stuff and we drove to Chicago. And yeah. And then I went back to school after that year off. So I went back to school at Columbia College, Chicago, and that's where I went to school and got my BFA.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's what a cool partnership. And so what did you do painting?
I did. And again, I went to college thinking it still at that time thinking like, well, I'm doing this because like I enjoy art. Like I enjoy making art and I enjoy learning about art history, but it was still, the thought like, oh, I'm an artist, I'm a painter. That didn't come until like I was way into school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was just so, and I knew nothing about the art world. I knew nothing about like that subculture. And so it was a very eye-opening experience to go to art school. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen the movie Art School Confidential, but you know, like understanding that world and just like,
I should watch that. I've never seen that actually.
It's kind of just like a parody of what it's like in art school. It's pretty funny, but you know,
it's probably like, pretty bang on.
Yeah. It's entertaining, but
because everybody you talk to has a very similar story about art school.
Yeah. It was eye opening. And also, so I was coming from like Kansas, Oklahoma, and you know, in Oklahoma, I went to school and girls were like in their PJs for an 8 a.m. class. And then when we moved to Chicago, it was just a total, we loved it. We loved the city, but then like I show up to, you know, to my class, the building I had my classes in, which was in the middle of, like the loop. And, I probably had like jeans and my New Balance sneakers and like a hooded sweatshirt. And we also, so the fine art building was also where the fashion students went to school.
Oh no.
So I remember like walking into the building and these girls are wearing like skinny jeans and stilettos and leather jackets. And I'm like, oh, what is happening? Like, so I think I went shopping that week.
I was just going to say, time to go shopping.
Yeah.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
Toto. You know what? It was so funny because I went to the University of Victoria on Vancouver Island, which is kind of like they would joke that it was sort of like a hippie school. Like if you didn't have Birkenstocks, they wouldn't let you on the ferry to go over. And but then UBC was in Vancouver and it was very like everybody dressed up. And so, yeah, if I had transferred to UBC, I would have had to go shopping too.
Yeah,
I totally get it. And so what was your experience like?
Gosh.
Good? Like, did you feel like you're in the right spot now? And
yeah, it was really good. It was, I think it was a lot of learning all at once again, like kind of figuring out what the art world was. And it was just so different than I anticipated. Like, I don't know. Like I knew nothing about like having critiques and like having critical dialogue about your work and just, you know, going to classes for like new media work and sculpture and performance art. Like that was all very, very new and very new experience. And, like,
and did you feel overwhelmed or were you so excited to be part of that or a combo?
Oh, I was so excited. I was just eating it up. It was really great. And just to have like a total, again, I was in a very small, private religious school and like to go to move to Chicago and just have kind of my worldview totally turned upside down.
Yeah.
That was a really significant part of it too.
Wow. And so the paintings that you were doing there, are they anything like what you're doing now?
I would say they're similar. There's definitely like, if you put on my paintings, you know, from college to now, like in a line, you could definitely see like similarities and like similar color palettes and, motifs, you know, shapes that I've been working with for a long time, but, definitely like there's a lack of depth to the paintings I was making in college. When I look at them, they're very flat. Like they're almost like, I don't know how to describe them. I could choose you some photos of them, but yeah, they just lacked a lot of depth. But we're still like had a lot of like whimsy and then, you know, again, that was like part of a learning experience, is that probably shouldn't use words like whimsy about your paintings. Like my art professors looked down on that. Words like whimsy and kitschy, like they don't like to talk about those words. So
isn't it funny how you learn the dialogue of how to talk about it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's still really difficult.
Yeah, it is. And so at what point, because I thought it was so, I mean, I've talked to so many people who say exactly that they, and I mean, I did the same thing. I went to school for marine biology because even though I was the art kid in high school, because art seemed like a hobby.
Right.
And science seemed like a job.
Yeah.
You know, and so it took me a really long time to get my head. I mean, I'm still working on it, you know, saying I get that other people are artists and I love that, but it's hard for me to see myself like that. And so at what point did you say, yep, I'm going to be an artist when I grow up?
Well,
you still working on that or?
Yeah. I would say, probably towards the end of my college career in Chicago. That was my goal, but I was still like having thoughts like, oh, well, but I'll work at I'll try to work at like a nonprofit art center or things like that. You know, it was almost like I was making a fallback for myself to where, I was like, well, I'll keep making art, but like this, I have to have a job. And that is still something, I mean, it's still like a practicality. It's still something that like I have to, because I don't make art. I don't know if you knew that or not, but like I am not a full-time artist.
I did not know that until I quickly skimmed the Design Mom article.
Yeah.
And so saw that you have a job at a museum.
So I work at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art in Kansas City. And so I work in the modern and contemporary departments and I support the curators. And so again, like it's, you know, part of the art world is really interesting, but it's still, it is not quite happened that I'm a full-time artist. But
would you want that? Or do you like the fact that you kind of have, you know, because you are so interested in so many things, is that kind of working for you or is the goal to eventually be full-time artist?
Yeah, I would say that's the goal. That's the dream, is to eventually do that. You know, it's just financial.
Yeah.
It stinks that's the reality, but I definitely have, like, the more I've sold, the more support I've gotten, the more interest people have. It's, you know, it's been over time that I've been able to say, oh, yeah, I'm an artist. I can call myself an artist. Even this is so, like, small, but kind of, I guess it was a moment of significance that even on Instagram for years, I mean, pretty much the whole time I've had Instagram, in the bio, it has said paintings and stuff because
oh, no.
Kind of just like that's my kind of humor. Just like, oh, you know, paintings and stuff. But just in the last month, I changed it to artist.
Wow. Yay. You get a clap for that.
Yeah.
That it's a hard word to say out loud for some people.
Yeah. And I felt, and again, it was just like this little small moment with myself, but it was like, you know what? This is kind of crap. Like I need
yeah,
to. Yeah,
you've
like,
earned it. It's yeah. real. Yeah. Own it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually the woman that I talked to last week is self-taught and, she can call herself an artist. And I said, like, if you go to a dinner party and someone says, what do you do? What would you say if you were at a dinner party and said, oh, what do you do? What would you say? Would you say artist or would you say, oh, I work at this museum?
I've kind of trained myself to say both. So at this time I say, I'm a museum professional, but I'm also an artist.
Oh, I like
that.
So I
kind of bundle them now because I've come to a point where I'm not letting myself disclude that from my description.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I got to work on that. I was standing outside my son's school the other day waiting to pick him up, standing under a tree thinking, because I ask you guys this all the time. And I was like, what would I say? Because I have said graphic designer for mm-hmm. my whole life and I have just officially stopped so that Jealous Curator can be my job.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Like just a couple weeks ago. And so I'm standing under that tree thinking, well, now what the hell do I say?
Yeah.
And so I don't want to say blogger.
Right.
But yeah. then I don't want to
say. That doesn't quite encompass it.
No, but then do you say writer? But then that's not really right. And I feel weird saying that because I didn't even close to go to school for that. Then I'm like artist, but I'm not making money for my art. I don't even know.
Could you call yourself an artist and critic?
Who?
You think critic is too kind of harsh of a word?
Yeah, I don't like that word.
Artist and art writer?
I like art writer. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Because I feel like blogger, no offense to bloggers, but it's more like, I don't know, you don't talk about like lifestyle and.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a very weird moment. So that's why I've asked you and I asked Gunjan because you're the two people, like, since this has happened to me that I'm like, I'm going to ask them what they say at a dinner party because I don't know what to say at a dinner party. So I just say, I'm Danielle. No, I actually just don't go to dinner parties. That's how I get out of that.
art enthusiast? I don't know.
I don't know either, but I really like what you said. Like, I don't want to, I have been making work and I'm going to start selling it soon. And
I'm so excited too. Oh. I like one.
Pardon?
I said, I hope I get one.
Oh, well, it's, you know, this has been my own little personal journey in all of this. And I figure, you know, I can't be a hypocrite. I'm telling everybody else to get out there. So I have to do it too. Right. So I really like what you said about, you know, kind of not deking out of that, like saying I am an artist and
right.
I have never really said that. And I've been able to hide out as a graphic designer and hide out as the Jealous Curator. And I feel like it's time to not hide out anymore.
Yeah.
So I really like your answer. That was good. And it's inspiring to me. And I'm sure it's inspiring to everybody else who's listening who finds other ways to describe themselves besides artists. So mm-hmm. we should all put on our artist badge today and say it out loud.
And change your Instagram description.
That's right. Get the and stuff out of there.
Yeah.
And so now you're not a new mom, but you're a newish mom.
Yeah.
And so Francis is just shy of two.
17 months.
17 so months.
A year and a half, just about.
Oh, my goodness. That was such a squishy age. I love that age. And so have you taken a break from painting? Because I know how demanding they are, especially once they start walking.
Yeah.
Or do you try and still get studio time every week? How are you balancing all of that right now?
I'd say like when she was born, I definitely took some time off. And I kind of just, the first year really, I kind of just let it be. I kind of just told myself to let it be what it is. You know, it's just, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And she probably around 11 months, she started sleeping through the night. And so that was at the point where I could start working in the evenings again.
Mm.
So that is primarily when I'm working, I get You know, I get home from work and we do dinner, and you know, the evenings are kind of a flurry of dinner and bath time and stories and all of that. And then she's normally down by like 8:30-ish. And then, if I'm again, and something I referenced in the Design Mom article, that there's like this crucial decision moment where I have to decide if I'm going to go sit down and watch Netflix, or if I'm going to like change into my studio clothes and go into my studio, because it's in, I have a room in my home. And so that's really, nice that I can, you know, it's just there.
Yeah.
Also very easy to not go there. And, anyway, so if I make the decision to keep working, then it's, you know, I'm in there about like 9 to midnight usually.
I was going to say, like, once you get in there, do you kind of just get on a roll? Is it hard to stop, or are you just wiped by midnight?
Yeah. It depends. I mean, I feel like it's night by night and like how much energy I have, but it's, I'm definitely having to change how I'm working, because before I had kids, like I would, or kid, a kid, I would, you know, I'd paint for 8 to 12 hours, like in a row. And, you know, I'd be in the studio like all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And now I'm having these like, you know, little 2 to 3 hour sessions, and it's just a new way of working that I'm just having to figure out. So,
yeah. You'll get those 8 to 12 hour days back.
Yeah. Someday.
Yeah. My son is almost 10 and he's just so independent now.
Uh-huh.
And I can go and have those days. And sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, it's nice to have the freedom, but then it's like, wow, he's getting so old. And So I think it's smart just to, to embrace that. It is what it is. You're not going to have your 8 hour days. That's not a tragedy. You have your 3 hour evenings and, you know, you keep on going.
Yeah.
And so do you find that you're, by changing like that kind of part of the way that you're working, is your work changing at all, or do you just, you just have shorter bursts?
Yeah. I feel like I'm still in it enough that I can't, I don't know for sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I'm still kind of figuring it out. It's just, I'm not getting as much work done. Like my output is different, because it's taking me longer to finish a painting.
Do they take you a long time? Because now, like compared to your college days, there is so much depth.
Yeah. They take a lot of time, especially, you know, the large ones, and the ones that have so much, all like the dots and the repetitive, that takes a long time. So, you know, every painting's different, but they can take anywhere from like 20 to 40 hours usually.
Wow. Okay. So this is where I'm jumping into process, 'cause I have all sorts of questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they all on paper?
No. I've been working on paper, and that is part of how I've been working differently, is that it takes me so long to finish a paper, or excuse me, a painting on canvas, which is primarily what I've done, for most of my work. And it's just been recently that I've started working on paper, because I can finish a painting in just a couple of days. And that is, like for some reason, that's just been more satisfying to me, to be like, okay, it's not going to take me 2 months to finish this, but I can do it in 2 days.
Right.
And so, and it's been not, I mean, like market wise speaking, it's been nice to offer people an original painting that's a little more affordable and economic. So.
Mm-hmm. And is it quite thick paper? Like, 'cause it seems like there must be a lot of paint on there, and how do they not buckle? I have a big issue with things buckling. I get very stressed when my things buckle. So I have a lot of questions for people.
So what I've been using, it's called wet media paper. So it is a thicker, it's not like watercolor. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's not like water. It's thicker than watercolor paper. It almost feels like tag board.
Oh.
Anyway, it's just like, you can get it in a pad. I think it's Strathmore is what I have.
Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, it's meant to take wet media. And so.
I like that.
It does. I mean, as it dries, it curls a little bit, but, I like it. I think it works well.
Okay, cool. Good to know. And because there is so much depth and so much stuff going on, do you have a plan going in, or do you have a plan, or do you just sort of let things flow?
I do not have a plan. So normally what I do is I start with some sort of color palette. I will, like, for instance, I was reading a book to my daughter a couple nights ago, and one of the illustrations on the page, like, just really, I was like, oh, those colors are awesome together. And so I will kind of see things, like palettes around, you know, with whatever I see around me, and I'll choose a specific palette. And that's where I start normally. Mm-hmm. So I will kind of just start with those paints out. Like, I'll literally just have those, you know, 3 to 4 colors on my palette to start with. And then, you know, slowly I'll be pulling in tubes of paint from other things. And so that's kind of, I always start with color. And then, I mean, sometimes I'll have a vague idea of what forms I want to put in there, but generally it's not. Generally I start with kind of some color washes and just abstract painting. And then as that develops into a form of some sort, then that's where I start layering in more of the geometric shapes and forms. So it's kind of like each, so, you know, those abstract marks start to inform where the geometric forms are going to go. The geometric forms inform, you know, where the next layers are going to go. And so it's kind of a, I just work with what happens. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah. It sounds very meditative.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely. I get into a zone.
Yeah. And do you ever, I mean, okay, what about the dreaded, I actually love this. I saw this on your Instagram feed. I'm going to read it. What did you say? Somebody said something about your pieces and you said, somebody said, stop right now. I think you had just done like underpainting in a tiny bit. And somebody said, it's amazing now. Stop right now. And you said, oh, I just keep adding till the voices tell me to stop.
Uh-huh.
And I love that. And so what do you, like, that is such a huge problem for so many people. It's like, how do you know when you're done, especially when it's abstract and especially when there's a lot of layers? It's like, how do you know? And like, are you scared when you get to a point where you're like, ooh, I really like it. And if I put this one more color on, am I going to wreck this whole thing? Like, do you ever have that moment, or do you just like keep going? And if you do something like that, you just work it into the composition. Like, how does that all go for you?
Yeah.
That was like 12 questions in
one.
Sure.
No, I think I can answer them. Okay. I would say, first of all, I don't actually hear voices. That was a dramatic way of saying that it's all very intuitive. I'm not crazy. But let's see. Let me think. Now I am forgetting the 12 questions.
So the whole idea of stopping, how do you know, like, how do you know when to stop?
Yeah. So I would say I'm a maximalist, first of all. And so, like, a lot of people will say, they think it's done, and I'm like, oh yeah, no way. It's like a fourth of the way done. But as far as like adding, when I add color or things in, if I'm afraid it's going to ruin it, no. I really, like, I don't get too precious about anything within the painting, like, because acrylic is really forgiving, and I primarily paint with acrylic, and so I am always, I'll experiment with all kinds of things, and if I don't like it, I just paint over it. Or mm-hmm. I've learned to work with acrylic in a way that I can, like, lay something down with the paint really thinned out, and then I can, like, wipe it off really quickly if I don't like it. So I've just, like, learned how to work with it to try things. But yeah, I'm always willing to paint over things too. So,
mm-hmm. And you know, that's the key from so many people I've heard, is just like, you can't be precious.
Right.
Because the minute you are, you freeze.
Right. Yeah. And so when do I know when I'm done? It's just annoying. I guess it's just like, yeah, that's okay. I'm okay now. it's when it feels satisfying to me, I guess. Again, back, like, I feel like I'm a maximalist. So like, what other people see in an image, like, they may like where it is, but like in my mind, like, there's not enough going on yet. And so I add a lot.
I love that, because I'm very minimalist. I love, like, negative space and really, really simple. But I appreciate yours so much. My problem with your work is that, for me, was that I'd get to a point and I'd be questioning myself. It's so much easier for me to be a minimalist, because then I'm like, well, there we go, I'm done.
Yeah.
Next.
Well, but you have really lovely minimalist work, so it's working for you.
Yeah, I'll just keep going with that. For now, we'll see. Actually, I just did a piece for this show in Tasmania, of all places, and it's called the Polygon Show, and we all have to create a piece on this polygon. This woman sent us all, I think there's 30 artists, this polygon shape, and we can do whatever we want on it. And so I was just going to do one of my minimalist pieces, and then I was like, it was so empty. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't telling a proper story. And so I just kept cutting stuff out and cutting us, and it's jam-packed.
Yeah.
And I just showed my husband tonight, and because I'd been telling him about it, I said, ooh, I think it's like one of my favorite ones I've ever done, because I've still got my paint splat, I've still got collage, but I jammed it filled with stuff, and I really like it. So I think there's an evolution underway.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Me too. Now I have to glue it down. Yeah, I will. Yep.
Okay.
I'll
look out for it.
Okay. Yeah, I have to ship it soon, so I gotta hurry up.
Cool. Did it feel really freeing to keep going?
Yeah, it did actually, because that's what my work used to be like back in the day, and so it kind of felt nice. It sort of felt like marrying the old and the new, and that's how it's felt bringing paint back in. You know, I avoided paint for so long, and so it kind of felt like bringing an old friend back, just for a coffee date. Like, they're not moving in or anything, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's the same with using a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know if I'll keep doing that, but in this particular instance, it totally worked, and I had so much fun.
Good.
Because I could cut things out for 12 hours.
Yeah. You've definitely inspired me. I'm like, oh, that looks fun. I need to do some collage.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I just love it.
I'm actually going to be giving myself a little bit of a break in July, just to kind of like a mental art break.
Yeah.
From painting. But I have been thinking, like, I just want to do a new project just for like a short time, like I thought about just doing still lifes or something like that, like something totally different, just to kind of stretch myself and do something different.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll do some collaging.
You should, you know, it's because your paintings are kind of collage-ish.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
they're layered and there's different bits and, you know, like
sure.
It's similar composition wise.
Yeah. I have some, like one painting, actually the first painting I ever sold was when I had my BFA show, like the senior graduating show at Columbia, and Columbia College actually purchased my painting. And that was crazy.
Can you send me a picture of that piece so I can put it in the post?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Actually, I think it's on my website. Like, I think
okay.
Because if you go by the year, I think you just go to the earliest year.
Oh, okay.
You'll see it, but I can verify that. But there's a section of that painting that is like a pattern that was actually from an anthropology catalog, I think. But because I was pulling out a lot of magazine images and kind of not painting the collage, but like I would pull elements, patterns, and like color out of a lot of fashion magazines like J. Crew and Anthropology, and kind of using them as visual inspiration. And I still do that a little bit, but this was very specific that I was like using a pattern from a piece of furniture. And anyway, all that to say, collage aspects are in there probably.
Oh, that's so cool. Maybe that was your influence from hanging around all those fashion girls.
Maybe. I definitely, like when I discovered anthropology, that was an exciting day.
Yeah, no kidding. So much like, visual deliciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about, I love your titles.
Okay.
Like Worry Hole, for example.
Yeah. Okay. So have you, so this is where I'm kind of going to geek out a little bit. Have you heard of Carl Pilkington?
No.
Okay. Have you heard of Ricky Gervais?
Yes.
Okay. So, this is such a long story.
Is Carl his sidekick guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
Well, Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais have like written most, like they wrote The Office together and Extras.
But then don't they mock Carl all the time?
Yeah. So Carl, they used to do a radio show actually, and Carl was their producer. And
yes.
And so they kind of discovered that he would say things that were really funny. And so they started to do a pod, like a radio show with him, where they would let their producer kind of, you know, talk with him. And then that moved on to a podcast. And so when I was in, I'm sorry, I'm giving like the long story of my...
No, that's good. That's the point of a podcast. Keep talking.
So when Tyler and I, Tyler's my husband, when we lived in Chicago, we both did data entry for a job, and we so I would go do data entry for like hours every day as a side job, and I started listening to podcasts. And this was when Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant and Carlton Pilkington were doing a podcast. And I love Carl Pilkington. I think he's like the funniest person on earth, and then he's successively gotten more like famous, I guess. He's, you know, they have had TV shows like An Idiot Abroad come out, which is, I think, where people more widely recognize him now. Anyway, all to say, I think he's hilarious. My husband and I quote him all the time, like, from just, like, we have so much, so, anyway, I'm going on. I love him so much.
No, that's good.
Anyway, he, he just says the most silly things, and so... I would say like 90% of my paintings are titled from things that Carl Pilkington has said.
That is awesome.
I really wanted, I don't like providing a narrative to the paintings. Like I want them to just kind of be what they are and people can see what they want to see. And so I kind of like giving them nonsensical titles because it's hard to title work, but like two, it's kind of like it's my way of not giving them titles that I'm just making them totally nonsensical to where they don't really fit.
I like that. Then yeah. People can just come up with their own thing, but yeah. They kind of do add their own narrative because then I was trying to figure out what Jellyfish in a Trifle was. Yeah. And Willy Nilly by the Sea. And so I was like, are these things that you've overheard or like dreamt or what the heck are these things? Which is kind of neat because, you know, you do get lost in your work. There's so much going on and then you add that to it. And I just thought that was brilliant. So I needed to know where they came from.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, really on my website, I should, for every title, I should probably link a YouTube link too. So like people know.
It's good. It's better mystery. Have you ever sent him any of your work?
He was on, he was on Instagram for a while. And so like, I know I tagged him a few times. And I think one time he commented, not on a like painting, but there, we used to have a chalkboard in our kitchen and Tyler drew. So one thing that Rick Gervais makes fun of all the time is his round head. And so they say it's like a perfectly round head, like an orange. And so, they say it had like an effing orange, but.
Right. Sure.
Anyway, so Tyler like drew a picture of him on the chalkboard and I took a picture of it and tagged him. And I don't know, he said like, oh, that's good or something like that. And
That's so funny. But I wonder if he even knows like that you title your work that way.
Yeah. I don't know. It would probably annoy him, actually. He gets annoyed by everything, but anyway.
I bet he wouldn't. I bet he would be very, very flattered. Yeah. That is really cool. I'm so glad I asked you that.
Yeah. It's kind of, again, yeah, I'm geeking out about it, but it's our weird little.
I love it. Thing. No, and you're right. You know, titling is really a hard thing. All of mine used to be untitled generally.
Yeah.
Until this new work, and then the titles are kind of part of it. But that's Pardon?
I said they're so great. Your titles for your new
work. Oh, thanks. Well, and that's why yours are so great too. And I was like, where are these things coming from? And then like Martha Rich, she, you know, a lot of her stuff is titled over like conversations she overhears on the bus or whatever.
Right.
You know, so that's why I was like, these weird things that your kid has said. But then, you know, no.
Right. Yeah.
Jellyfish in a Trifle. She might say that at some point. You never know. So what do you think, like, I know that you're going to take July sort of off from your usual stuff, explore other things. Are you, you know, what is next for you? What do you wish
is next for you?
Let's see. I know another, sorry, I'm babbling. You can cut this part out, right?
Oh yeah.
I would love to, well, again, like painting full time would be the dream, but, I guess my, you know, finding, I'm not currently represented by a gallery. So like, that would be great to find representation of some sort.
See, that totally surprises me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not, I kind of, one thing I've struggled with, to be honest, is I feel like my work kind of straddles this line between commercial and fine art, and it's been kind of hard to know where to pitch, you know, like what camp I'm in. And I'll do prints, and those feel more like, you know, for a commercial market, those are easier for people to purchase. But then I'm also like, I'm a painter, and I want to be taken seriously as a painter, but it's, you know, I don't know if you've experienced that at all, or like, no, can under, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I totally do. Yeah.
Okay.
I totally do.
So within representation, that's kind of like, you know, there's galleries that are more commercial and ones that are more fine art that would like oftentimes not really, they're not interested. I don't know. There's, even not interested to the point where like I'm using acrylic paint versus oil paint. Things like that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's this weird, and not in all cases, but that's again, like, I feel like an art world, quirk that there's certain biases of like materials and, it was really,
I totally get that.
Yeah. I went to, in Chicago a couple months ago, I don't know if you're familiar with Kerry James Marshall's work, but you should look it up. He's amazing. But he's an artist, so he has like a retrospective going on right now in Chicago. And all of his paintings are acrylic. And so it was kind of really satisfying and affirming to be like, okay, Kerry James Marshall uses acrylic. Like, I'm all right. Like, it's cool.
Yeah. I've had that conversation with a lot of artists who use embroidery thread and things like that, and they're put right into the craft camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the Etsy camp and whatever, and they're like, no,
right.
You know, it still has meaning, and there's still, I just happen to be using thread instead of paint,
right.
But it cuts them off from a lot of stuff. And, a few of them now have found representation with galleries that get them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this was a huge aha moment for me when I first started Jealous Curator. And I mean, I didn't even know where to look for tomorrow's next post, you know? And so I would just find a gallery, you know, at first I was Googling galleries in New York and whatever would come up, I would just go through their whole roster looking to be jealous. And I remember like there was a few where I'd go through and they'd represent say 80 artists and I would go through all 80. And this is like a New York gallery.
Right.
I'd go through all 80 and not want to write about any of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I liked them, but there was nothing that gave me that pang of, oh man.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, but they're represented by a gallery.
Right.
And so it kind of made me start to realize like there's a spot for everyone. It's just like my whole thing before was that I was just trying to get into any gallery.
Right.
As opposed to, oh, well, hang on. Out of the 100 galleries on this block, there might only be one that gets me.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was a huge aha moment for me. It took a 100 pounds off my shoulders because it kind of made me, instead of feeling like I was being rejected by all of these things, it was like, oh, okay, I just need to keep doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the right people will find me, or I'll find the right people. And, you know, a lot of the artists that I've talked to that, you know, are with the right gallery now, or people who've been with the wrong gallery.
Right.
And have gotten out of it and found it. It's just that. It's exactly that. Like just finding somebody that gets you and lets you just be you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a tricky fit. I mean, it's like trying to find somebody to marry, I think.
Right.
You know? It's like a tricky, tricky fit. And it's not just like going and getting into the first gallery that, you know, it just might not be the right one.
Right. Because they have to like work on your behalf and be excited about what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a partnership. And so finding that right one is, yeah. It's tricky, but if that's something that you want, I'm sure. I mean, I'm stunned that you don't have that.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening,
yes, anybody, here's my number. Anybody, yeah.
Yeah.
I like yeah. that. Well, that happened after after Sarah G. Miller was on. We were talking
really?
About that, yeah. And she said that she really, I said, if you in the speed round, I said, if you could show anywhere in the world, where would you show? And she lives in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And she said, honestly, she's like, it's not a cool answer, but Vancouver. She's like, I want to show my city what I can do. Oh. And then her show at Ian Tan Gallery on South Granville, which is a beautiful gallery, went up this week or next week? Which is crazy.
That's awesome.
I know. So, and they're going to represent her now. So it's just so cool. So galleries.
Yeah.
You'd be a fool to miss out. Somebody come and grab her. Okay, there we
can
go.
Can I answer where my dream would be?
Yeah.
Somewhere in Australia.
Ooh.
Those
so that
people,
you could go?
Well, that too. But far and beyond, my number one place that I've shipped to internationally, paintings and canvas paintings and prints, is Australia. They Australians just get my work. They're all about it for whatever reason.
Wow.
I love you guys in Australia. You
Yay,
make me
Australia.
Feel so good.
Is it Sydney specific or is it everywhere?
I mean, kind of everywhere. I feel like I've gotten a lot from Melbourne.
Yeah.
But they seem to have a lot of, I don't know. A lot of the artists I see there in design work, it's just all so colorful and happy. And I think my work just fits in with what they have going on. So.
Okay. Well, even more. We've narrowed it in even more.
Gosh, it costs so much to ship there. That's the problem. But.
Well, maybe you guys should go there.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
And you could work there for a few months.
Yeah. Oh,
and then, then have the show.
Do you follow Kira Jameson?
Yes.
On, oh my gosh, that girl's living the dream.
Yeah. Her work is crazy beautiful.
She paints on the beach and then has a yoga studio. And I'm this is amazing.
You could do that.
Yeah. Well, I can't do yoga.
You could just paint on the beach.
Yeah.
And Frances can roll around in the sand and play.
She would love it.
Oh.
So yeah, that's a big hopeful of what's next. And I've, things doing things licensing for commercial products and things like that. I would love to do that too. I just did the Alchemy Products Candle Company, also out of Australia. They licensed one of the Jellyfish and a Trifle painting actually for product packaging for candles. And that was the coolest thing to see my work on packaging.
Wow.
And I got so excited. So. Stuff like that would be really fun to do more of.
Okay. There, that's out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever done, we'll talk about this later. Okay. Have you ever done anything with Land of Nod?
That's so funny you asked that because I, I went and met with them, I met them in Kansas City and then I went to Chicago and met, with Michelle.
Yeah.
Danielle, and talked to them. And so I'm in relationship with them. Hi, Michelle and Danielle.
Michelle's probably listening right now.
But no, it hasn't so we've talked a little bit, but we just haven't. I've not been assigned to any products or projects yet. So
Michelle. Okay. No, I just your color palette and all your patterns and everything would be amazing. Okay,
yeah.
So but Michelle probably already knows that. And she's probably already got plans for you anyway.
Yeah. They've also, both of them have bought work for me. So they're so great. I love them.
Yeah. Yeah. They are fantastic. And Michelle is just she genuinely loves art so mm-hmm. much,
Her, going into her office was so great. I asked her if I could take pictures of her office because it was so cool.
I've never been there. I've never been to Chicago.
What?
I know. So I was saying to Michelle for when the book comes out, because now I've got excuses to go everywhere that I want to go. And so I said, let's do an event in Chicago. So we're just trying to decide if that's at Land of Nod or if it's an event, somewhere else. And I don't know. And she just comes and hangs out and drinks wine. I don't know. So anyway, we're going to plan that basically as an excuse to get me to Chicago.
Cool. Yeah. It's such a great city.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Just don't go in the wintertime, but.
Yeah, I won't. I lived in Toronto for 10 years. I know. Yeah.
June through October, you should be good.
Okay, good. I can do that. Okay, so all we have left, speed round.
Okay. Oh gosh. I'm like a super, like, I think I'm a thoughtful person, and so, like, this intimidates me probably more than anything.
Have you heard my speed rounds? Well, there's nothing speedy about any of them. We always digress, so.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's my fault. I always, like, go on. Okay, I'll try and go fast. Ready? Favorite candy?
Oh, my gosh. Currently, Starburst's Unwrapped Reds. So specific.
I wonder because you're... paintings look like candy.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if she loves candy.
I do. It's a problem.
Okay, so then I had to counteract that question and say favorite vegetable. Because you're a mom now. You have to show some responsibility.
I know. You know what? I would say spinach because I put it into smoothies so I can't taste it. So like that's how I get my influx of greens into me and my kids.
There you go. After you've popped all your Starburst, wash it down with some spinach.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. This is my son. He's super into Would You Rathers. And I thought that this was appropriate for your work.
Okay.
Would you rather go into outer space or deep sea diving?
Outer space for sure. No, gosh. I'm afraid of heights, but I'm also kind of claustrophobic. These are both terrible. These are terrible.
I know. I wouldn't want to do either. That's what I was thinking. Especially now that I'm a mom, I'm like terrified to do anything remotely dangerous. But
yeah, I'm going to change my answer and say underwater. I feel like there's less chance of dying underwater than going out into outer space.
I know. That's so funny. See, now before I had kids, I'd be like, oh, which experience would be? And now that I'm a mom, like, I'm like, how could I die and leave my child motherless? I have to take the safest option.
I just told my parents a couple weeks ago, I was like, I don't know how you let me go to amusement parks when I was like 12. Like, they're just like death machines run by teenagers.
I know. Drunk teenagers.
Yeah.
I know. I'm exactly the same way. I ask my parents stuff all the time. Like, how on earth did you, you know, anyway, it was a different
time. Anything. Yeah. Anything.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And I noticed this on your Instagram feed. What's your go-to emoji?
Let's see. I do the smiley face with like kind of the teeth. What would you call that? You know, the teeth where it's kind of like the awkward face.
Yeah.
I do that a lot. Maybe that's because I experience that emotion a lot. I use that emoji a lot.
That's a good one. I was going to ask you that and I thought, I wonder if she uses them. I better go check. And I checked your Instagram feed and I was like, yep.
Yeah.
I love a good emoji.
I do too.
I've been pretty into the unicorn head lately.
Oh, that would be my second. I love it.
I know, me too. It brings back all of my sticker book days.
Yeah.
In my mind and rainbows. That's
I use it a lot. Well, I have used it a lot on like painting posts. Like I'll do the unicorn because it's just like that's who lives in my painting.
That's right. It's magical. I did a combo the other day that was unicorn head poop. And I quite like that combo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to bring that back.
Okay. Maybe you cut this part out of the conversation, but there's, if you've not seen this commercial, you have to see it. It's a commercial, you can find it on YouTube I think it's called a Squatty Potty.
Oh no.
And it's like this thing that it's like a little stool that you get that like fits around your toilet seat so that you can lift your legs up to be in a more ergonomically correct position to go to the bathroom. But the commercial is like about unicorn poop. And like, it's like the unicorn is pooping rainbows into ice cream cones. And then they have like kids that are like, oh, it's so funny.
Was
it's
this
so
made in Japan? What's going on?
No, it wasn't. But oh my gosh.
I'm writing that down. What was it? Squatty Potty?
I think it's a Squatty Potty, but like immediately after we're done, you have to go find it.
Okay. That's what I'm going to do. And then I'll put a link to it in the post and everyone can enjoy the Squatty
Please
Potty.
Do. Okay. I mean, and that you will not, I mean, that's what those emojis were made for.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, I'm clearly a kindred spirit with them. Now so I know what to post and then I know the emojis to go with it.
So you're going to post this. It means you're not going to cut this.
I'm not cutting it out. I'm putting that in. You can never say to me,
You're welcome.
Cut this part out and then keep talking because that is my trigger to go, oh, this is going to be good. And we're keeping this in. Oh, speaking of good things, I wanted to say when you said you were trying, if you, on the evenings when you have to try and decide to go in your studio or watch Netflix, mm-hmm. have you seen the O.J. Simpson documentary?
No. Should I?
Oh my God, it's so good. It's
like, is it going to make me angry though?
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to make you angry. It's going to make you a tiny bit nauseous, mixed with rage, mixed with sadness, mixed with resolution.
Okay.
But it's, I mean, I was in university when that was all happening. And so I was kind of following, but not really following.
Yeah.
And I thought I knew all the stuff, but they talk about his childhood and go into like what race relations were like in LA when he was playing football in university and sort of, I think the documentary is called O.J. Simpson Made in America because it basically is like he was created, you know, in LA in that time. And this is, you know, anyway, it's 5 parts. Each part is 2 hours.
Oh my.
Okay. And my husband and I binge watched it. And like every time Charlie was like, can I play Xbox with my friends? We were like, you bet. And we'd run upstairs and watch on the other TV. So Charlie played way too much Xbox because we just could not stop watching. Anyway, we finished it today at lunchtime.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, now what the hell are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Well,
it is a bit upsetting. I mean, it's obviously upsetting, but it's just crazy to know all of the stuff from like the 60s and 70s and just the whole backstory. And anyway, it's very good.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay. Good recommendation.
You should probably go into your studio and paint and also take care of your kid and give her spinach. But if you have 10 hours to spare, go watch that.
Okay.
Okay. I could talk about TV all day long, so I'm just going to stop right there and say thank you so much for coming and doing this with me, and you weren't scary and intimidating at all.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're very kind.
And we're going to get you a giant show in Australia now.
That'd be awesome. I mean, anywhere, really, but, like, Australia, I'll take it.
Yeah, obviously, there's something going on there. There's a little love fest with them, so why not?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, well, I'm going to send that out in the universe, and we will see what we can make happen, and I'm going to continue following along on Instagram, and everybody can pop over to the site. I'm going to do a big post and show all the work that we talked about and link to the squatty potty and all the and all the good stuff.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's awesome. That's what we need.
Yeah.
Who doesn't need a squatty potty? Really? Yeah.
I mean, I haven't bought one yet. I don't own one.
Yet.
Yeah.
It's ergonomic. It's just the right thing to do. Well, thank you so much for doing this. And I am so excited to actually feel like I know you a little bit now. And if I make my way to Chicago, if you can pop up too, or who knows, but hopefully we'll cross paths in the real world instead of just Facebook.
Yes, for sure. I would love that.
Me too.
So much.
All right. Well, take care and have your spinach tomorrow. Okay. Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Wow. We really covered the full spectrum there, didn't we? How we went from talking about making art a full-time gig to the squatty potty, I will never know. Actually, that's not true. I do know. It was the speed round. The speed round always produces the weirdest, most hilarious conversations. Anyway, I am so thrilled to have finally talked to Jamie. I love that she's a maximalist, a mom, and a lover of Netflix. Pop over to my site, thejealouscurator.com, to see all of Jamie's beautiful work and a few shots of her sweet little girl at work in the studio, too. I've also posted links to all of the things we talked about. That means you too, Carl. I'm pretending that he listens religiously to my podcast. And then you should obviously buy one of Jamie's paintings, Carl. Maybe Jellyfish in a Trifle. Thanks to Jamie for taking the time to do this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for continuing to support the podcast. And thanks, of course, to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.